It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law here on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240. Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins, and Andrew Foster all with us here this morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning, Ben.
Good to have everybody here.
It is. It's a good day. Wes is here this morning as usual, and I am as usual. But again, we are glad to have Andrew Foster here at the radio program with us, Ben. Andrew, for those that have just did not hear last week or week before, is a new associate lawyer with the law firm. Welcome, Andrew.
Good to have you back, Andrew. Third week in a row, you're a regular now, so you get your own coffee now.
That's right, Ben. We talk about tax brings out the questions, brings out a lot of issues, and yes, I think that's why I keep coming back.
That's right.
No doubt.
We thought maybe if we didn't bring Andrew back this week, some of our listeners might have withdrawal. But look, for those, again, that did not hear the previous programs, Andrew has an LLM in taxation, which is a post-law degree that some lawyers obtain after receiving a JD degree. They go for an additional year and receive some intense training in just the areas of tax and taxation.
Mm-hmm.
And today, there are so many questions about, there's so many different types of taxes. You know, people will say, well, what are the tax consequences? Well, you know, are we talking about capital gain? Are we talking about the estate tax, or the death tax, inheritance tax, which, by the way, are all the same? They're all the same terminology for basically the estate tax, gift tax, capital gain tax. They're different types. So let's kind of go through some of the different ones and see kind of where they apply, Andrew, this morning. And one of the ones that just seems to always come up in our office so often is the taxability of an IRA, for instance, when someone dies. Let's talk about that and the rules that apply to an individual retirement account when someone passes on.
Yeah, that's very good, Cecil. You know, a lot of people think that now that the estate tax is so high, that it's $5.25 million, that there are no tax consequences when someone passes away. But there are various ways, IRA being one of them, that tax consequences come up.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, you know, a personal representative is in charge of filing a decedent's final tax returns. Now, you're mentioning different types of tax. That's an income tax issue. So, you know, what we can do if we have someone who needs an estate done is we can go through those documentations. We can go through 1099s. We can go through W-2s. We can determine whether there is a final income tax return that needs to be prepared for a decedent. And that's step one. Another step is seeing if there is an estate tax that's due. Now, again, this is the $5.25 million threshold. But, you know, you just never know. You want to make sure you categorize all the assets, make sure you get the values appropriately. And if there is an estate tax return that's due, we can do that as well. There's also an estate income tax return that has to be considered. This is Form 1041. If an estate generates greater than $600 in gross income during any particular year, and sometimes estates do go longer than a year, then you have to take this into consideration as well and possibly file a 1041. That's another tax consequence that can happen when someone passes away that you need to take into consideration.
And that one is almost, having to file a fiduciary income tax return, Ben, is almost inevitable in any estate with some semblance of significant assets. It may not be at the $5 million level, but if it is at any level of complexity. I mean, you know, $700,000-$900,000 stock account, well underneath, you know, the $5.2 million, but yet more than likely it will trigger a fiduciary.
It's producing a gain, so
yes, it is,
and or an income producing property, perhaps. Would that be in an estate?
It would be, and we realize, Ben, right now that we're throwing around some heavy words. Fiduciary is the executor. And what's happening here is that, let's keep in mind that someone has died. So this income is not going to be trapped on their individual tax return because mm-hmm. they're no longer living.
Right.
And it's trapped in the estate as income.
Mm-hmm.
It's not to the beneficiary yet either. So it's not on their personal income tax return because it hasn't been distributed to the beneficiary. So in that pendency, in that interim period between the death of one of someone and the time in which the heir receives the asset, there could very likely be income. And that is, of course, reported on this fiduciary tax return.
Taxable purgatory, I guess is what that is. Waiting to see what happens. Our number is here if you want to call in with your question, 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674. So, again, there are these taxable events that can happen for an estate. Right.
Exactly. And that's really the main thing I wanted to focus on is just to say that, and I think Cecil did a great job right there, is saying that it does not end with death. A lot of people are just like, okay, $5 million estate tax threshold. We don't have to worry about taxes anymore. Well, that's completely wrong. Mm-hmm. There are just so many different areas that come up. And, you know, Cecil, you did a good job. That's $600 threshold.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's pretty low.
Right.
I mean, you think about $600 worth of gain. All I could take is some dividends, some interest, and you're there. And so it's very important to take that in consideration. And if the fiduciary does not file this return, they can become personally liable mm-hmm. for any tax that's owed.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's vitally important because now you're taking yourself from fiduciary role to all of a sudden being personally liable because of your failure to not file these documents.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to stay on top of that, and that's why I think it's very important to get professionals involved.
Okay.
Now, Andrew, tell us as best we can in the brief period of time we have about the IRA distributions. Certain rules apply to the spouse, and other rules apply to all other types of beneficiaries. First of all, Ben, we've talked so many times on this program about an IRA does not pass according to the last will and testament.
Mm-hmm.
An IRA has a beneficiary designation form.
Right.
You designate who your beneficiary is of your IRA. And of course, almost always, not 100% of the time, but most of the time, if we are married, then we designate our spouse.
Mm-hmm.
And if we are not married or if we've lost our spouse and we have children, then we designate our children. Those are the most common designations that we see, either the surviving spouse or the children of the decedent.
Okay, so what happens to that?
Well, there's two different rules, as Cecil said. First of all, if a spouse is going to get an IRA, they actually have the best of both worlds, I like to call it. They have a 60-day period with which to roll over that account into their own IRA, if they so choose, and treat that money as if it was their own.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they can take the distributions just as they're required to take their distributions. Now, that's great. That's perfect for a spouse, and it makes a lot of sense because you want to give the spouse that flexibility. However, let's talk about a non-spouse beneficiary. Non-spouse does not have a 60-day period. There is no 60-day period to roll it over. You actually have to create an inherited IRA account if you want to prolong this non-tax consequences.
Start a new IRA. Basically.
Exactly. Start a new IRA, label it as an inherited IRA, and then a trustee must roll this money over for you into that account.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, you lose all that, you know, tax that's been deferred.
Who would be the trustee for that? I mean, how would that be figured out?
Well, the trustee would be whoever's holding the money.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, let's say you've got it at, you know, a brokerage
XYZ,
firm. Yeah. And they can transfer that money over into an inherited IRA for you. And then you have some options. You can either take a stretch option, which we call take it over your life, mm-hmm. your lifetime, or you can take it out within a 5-year period, or you can take a lump sum distribution and just go ahead and say, I need the money now. I'm willing to pay the tax consequences.
Mm-hmm.
But the issue here, Ben, is that you need to know your options.
Right.
And we haven't even gotten into, I've really simplified things here. There are certain ages that have to be taken into consideration as well, and whether required minimum distributions are required.
Mm-hmm.
You may have heard the 70 and a half term.
Mm-hmm.
If you're over 70 and a half, the decedent was, then there are certain distributions that have to be taken in a timely manner. the year after the person passes away.
Oh, the person who died, if they're over 70 and a half.
Exactly.
Not the
right.
one receiving it.
Yeah, that, and that's a little tricky rule there. If the person's 70 and a half, let's say, and you're supposed to inherit that IRA, and they have not taken a distribution that year, you have to make sure a distribution is taken, the required minimum distribution, or else you can be subject to the tax consequences
so
of 50% penalty.
That would go into the estate and be dispersed depending on how the estate was set up, right? Would that go into the estate?
No. It's still designated beneficiaries. So we're talking about non-probate assets. But the key here is that if the person's over 70 and a half and there is a distribution that has to be taken, then the person who's receiving that as the qualified beneficiary has to make sure that required minimum distribution is taken in the year in which the decedent passes away or the following year.
Okay.
Again, we're getting to some complex stuff, but I think just talking about it lends you to believe that you really need to make sure you understand the rules and how they apply.
May not be able to take it with you, but sure have to give it.
That's right.
At some point in time. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, also with Andrew Foster, talking about taxes as well. And your questions are always welcome at 800-818-2255, 247-7282, and 353-4674. Welcome back with Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio with us, along with Andrew Foster, talking about taxes once again.
Ben, it's not as complicated as we're making it, is it, Andrew? We're talking about We're talking about an individual retirement account. I think sometimes it just helps to remember the word individual. So many questions evolve around, well, can my corporation be the beneficiary of my IRA? Can my trust be the beneficiary of my IRA? Can the trust for my minor child be the beneficiary of my IRA? Well, an IRA begins with the word I, individual, and it must be held by an individual,
okay,
not a corporation,
right,
not a trust. And So that's something that really helps, I think, in terms of getting our ducks beginning to get them in a row. Now, of course, we've talked about the fact that they then have a beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
And if they are a spouse, then, you know, we're going to find very quickly that the full complement of all the benefits of holding an IRA then apply to a spouse.
Right.
Okay. Not the 70 and a half rule.
Mm-hmm.
Not the 5 year. Take it out over time rule. Those rules don't apply to a spouse. A spouse can take the IRA, and it's their IRA, and now subject to all the benefits of an individual retirement account for an individual.
Mm-hmm.
They will have to take their minimum distribution when they become 70 and a half, but they're not going to have to do it because their husband happened to be 70 and a half.
Right.
There's a whole set of rules that apply to a spouse. And then, of course, there's a separate set of rules, very distinct, very different, that apply to all of the other kinds of beneficiaries other than a spouse.
Right.
If you are a child or a nephew, a niece, a grandchild, a friend, a neighbor, all these, of course, would be non-spouse beneficiaries.
Mm-hmm.
And now there is a set of rules, and Andrew began to explain that one of the threshold rules is that you're not going to be able to take this IRA as a beneficiary, as a non-spouse, and put it in your name.
Mm-hmm.
This is a terrible thing that happens. We have a file in our office right now where this, in fact, did happen. And then turn around and decide after you get the $50,000 or $75,000 IRA, well, by the way, now I want to put this in my IRA.
Right.
That does not apply if you are a non-spouse.
You have to, as Andrew, as you were explaining it, you have to have a trustee, whoever's holding that IRA, go ahead and roll it into an inherited IRA. Is that right?
That's perfectly correct, right. Yes.
And now, if the person, again, who passed away was already 70 and a half, then a distribution would have to be made if there wasn't one already, right?
Yeah, I was kind of getting to that, Ben, and I may have mix my words up a little bit. The main thing is that if the person was 70 and a half and there was a distribution that was supposed to be taken that year, let's just say it happened on December 25th, the person passed away, you know, you have 6 days to take that required minimum distribution for that person, mm-hmm. or else you can be subject to a 50% penalty.
Now, would that then be the only distribution because now it's an inherited one?
Yeah, yes, that would be correct. But the main thing is that distribution would have to be taken because none had been taken for that year.
Okay. But as you said, the biggest thing is that you have to make sure the trustee makes that transfer into the inherited IRA so it doesn't all of a sudden you get hit with a bill.
That's correct. Well, the worst thing that can happen, Ben, is when you have a beneficiary call you up and say, okay, I got this money in my account. Now what do I do? And your response is, well, there's not much we can do at this point. The IRS is not very lenient once someone gets that money in their hand. So really the best thing you can do is just tell the financial advisor to hold the money and contact someone and then find out what are your options. And we've kind of gone over several here. Mm-hmm. One, we've kind of said lump sum distribution. You take the full value of the IRA and you take the tax consequences. And Wes was kind of asking me during the break, he said, what are the tax consequences? And I say, well, whatever's in that IRA, if there's $25,000, if there's $100,000, if there's $1 million, you add that into your income mm-hmm. and you pay the income tax rate on that money. So that's why we say that taking that lump sum distribution is so painful, because whatever money's in there, you're going to pay the full tax consequences on that. Whereas if you choose the inherited IRA, the stretch option as we called it, and say, put that money in an inherited IRA, take it out over my lifetime, then we can stretch that tax consequences out over time to give you the best possible tax consequences, the lowest rate possible mm-hmm. over the year. Instead of taking $20,000 at one time, you're going to take $20,000 over 10, 20 years.
Actually makes a lot of sense that way. So, but let me ask you one other scenario, because I would imagine you guys would see this fair often. A person is a beneficiary. They didn't know they were a beneficiary, and a check shows up. If they don't cash that check, If they get smart and say, hey, and call you and say, what do I do with this? I have the check. Can they still get an inherited IRA because they haven't received the money in an account yet?
That's a great question, Ben. That's kind of the issue that Cecil was talking about that we had in the file. I was able to do a little bit of research on that particular issue. And as long as that check is not cashed, we're still in the game.
Okay.
As soon as that money hits your account, it's game over.
Yeah.
So the main thing is that if we can try to reverse that transaction, get that check written, to the proper person as an inherited IRA, then that money can be rolled over, and we have options such as the stretch option over mm-hmm. the person's lifetime, maybe the 5-year option, maybe someone wants to do that instead of the stretch option, or take the lump sum if they just want to cash the check. Yes. But we're still in the game at that point, and we can talk you through that.
All right, I'm happy to be the unnamed or the unknown beneficiary of anybody's IRA if they want to do that. Now I know what to do if a check shows up.
Ben, this just brings up an interesting issue. So many of our listeners know or have heard that, my loved one has died and there really isn't anything in the estate. The house was already put in the children's name. The life insurance has a beneficiary and the IRA has a beneficiary. So, I really don't need to talk to a lawyer. The clerk of court really can handle this for me.
Mm-hmm.
There is no need for a lawyer to be involved in the estate because there are no assets that are passing through probate. Well, because after all, this IRA, this $350,000 IRA is not passing through the probate estate, Ben.
All right, let's find out if that's myth or fact in just a moment here on Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. Andrew Foster, also a special guest too, the tax expert with Harvell and Collins. We'll have more to come in a moment. Hey, welcome back to the program again with Cecil Harvell, Wes Collins, and Andrew Foster. And you proposed a myth or fact scenario there.
It's a scenario where a family is thinking that they do not need legal advice because of the fact that the assets are non-probate and are passing according to beneficiary.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go about, opening up the estate without the assistance of any legal, without having any legal advice. And, of course, you run into these very issues that we're talking about. the IRA, the $250,000 IRA gets split, you know, three ways between the three children, and the checks arrive at the doorstep and they cash them all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and right. their age, they're 40 years old, the children.
Right.
Okay. Well, no, there was not, this was not a probate asset. Okay, but was there legal advice needed on the front end? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Because now they're stuck.
Now they're stuck.
Right.
What we're talking about, Ben, I don't know that we've actually nailed it. An individual retirement account allows those of us that have them, allows you to defer the income tax. Each and every year, you are deferring the income tax.
Mm-hmm.
Well, eventually, the government wants the income tax at some point, okay? And so, if it's just paid out to the children, as I just mentioned, and the check arrives at the doorstep and they cash it, then bingo. The income tax is now due. And of course, there also, I might add, can be penalties.
Right.
And interest that apply.
Mm-hmm. So again, all of those reasons why you want to go ahead and get that, that legal advice. And I know, Andrew, as we talk about these things, it sort of, if something happened on that scale, you pick up the phone and make the call for the advice. Don't think that you can just ask a neighbor or you can ask anybody else what they did. You need to get the really straight scoop.
That's right, Ben. And, you know, it was very telling. I was at a conference a couple weeks ago, and we were kind of talking about this IRA stuff. And, you know, the one thing is they're proposing to take this stretch option, meaning you get the inherited IRA, take it over your lifetime off the table,
mm-hmm.
and make it just a five-year option. Now, you're saying, why would Congress want to do that? Well, the key is tax revenue,
taxes, yes,
money.
Right.
So, you know, that is a very big benefit to allow someone to treat an IRA to have an inherited IRA and take it out over their lifetime. And it shows you it's even such a big benefit that Congress is thinking about curtailing that and taking it back. So it's very important, you know, if they give you that right to defer taxes,
do it.
Do it.
That's right. Again, advice that you want to take up as well, but with the folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law, you can call them at 252-726-9050. Find them online at harvellandcollins.com, 1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City, 252-726-9050.